Thank you. And Stocky, Chuck Gunn, Elton Witt. Thank you. Good morning, everyone. It's an honor to be here, and I want to thank Reverend Jill and Kit and Leah and all of you for the privilege of being your guest speaker. So, February, it's been a busy month, hasn't it? We've had several celebrations. Some of you may have celebrated Valentine's Day. Some of you may have done Galentine's. I understand the women's group kind of had their Galentine's Day this past weekend. Was that yesterday? Yeah, that was a new one for me, Galentine's. But I like the idea. Well, this month, we are also celebrating Black History Month. It is where we honor and celebrate the African Americans who have given their passions, their talents, their gifts, and their faith in shaping this nation into becoming closer to the nation we were meant to be. We're not there yet. And there are those who believe that we're a ways off, maybe even regressing. But I believe there are more builders of that beloved community, that ideal that is in our foundation, that's in our birth document, otherwise known as our Constitution. The thing is, we need to get rid of some of that shoddy construction and that faulty wiring that has been placed on top of our foundation. And you know, in Black history is a part of that reconstruction and rewiring. Now, I didn't know a lot about the history of Black History Month and the celebration, but I have learned quite a bit about it since then. It began in 1926, and it was celebrated during a week in February that encompassed both Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass's birthdays, and it was called Negro History Week. Now, we all know who Abraham Lincoln is. For those of us who are not familiar with Frederick Douglass, he was a slave in Maryland, and after many attempts, finally escaped to freedom and became a leader in the abolitionist movement. But the founding of Black History Week, or month, began, as I said, as Negro History Week, and it was started by Carter Woodson. Now, Carter Woodson is an African-American, Harvard-educated historian whose parents were slaves or former slaves. And he believed that truth could not be denied and that reason would prevail over prejudice. His father, he credits for the trajectory of his own life because his father told him to accept insult, to compromise on principle, to betray your fellow man, to mislead your people, is to lose your soul. It is to stay enslaved, is it not? So he believed, Woodson believed that celebrating Black history was actually a political act that would destroy those prejudices that were dividing this nation and teach universal love without distinction of one's race, merit, or rank. Now, he didn't think that just talking about or discovering about a Black inventor would necessarily inspire white magnanimity, but failure to accept Black people as the fellow architects of the United States was an existential threat to our nation that we call home. And so, freedom, when we think of the word freedom, it may mean different things to us. It may mean different things in the different phases of our life. But what I have come to understand and experience about true freedom, that it's first an inner revelation of the truth of who I am. I am a child of God. I am an expression of God. Knowing this truth gifts me with new sight of how I see myself, new sight of how I see everyone else. And therefore, it gifts me with a new way of being in this world. You see, the slaves understood that. They came to understand that. When the white colonists came to save their souls with their version of Christianity, they had convinced their white owners, and they were convinced themselves, that by saving the slave's soul would make them a better slave. It would make them more docile, more obedient. They would know their place. But the enslaved African heard something else. When he heard the stories of the Bible, she heard that God created them just as God had created the white man, that they all had that same foundation. They all were expressions of that one. There was a shift that shifted them. And so those who embraced the Christian faith did so without the falsehoods and the hypocrisy. They started to dismantle some of that shoddy construction, kind of pull out some of that faulty wiring, some of those false narratives that had been given to them, and shaped the gospel of Christ into a faith, a religion that met their existential living conditions and their growing religious development and spiritual needs. Of course, their white owners didn't like that and began to ban their gatherings. And it banned them from reading and writing because they wanted to know more. They were educating themselves. And so the slaves developed what's called the invisible institutions. They were also known as hush harbors. And these secret meetings allowed them to further develop their religion and their faith, because they came to understand that the gospel of Christ was about living a free existence, and it was about liberating not only themselves from an identity that was given to them that never belonged to them, but also in liberating their people and becoming who they were meant to be. They knew that shift had opened, and it gifted them with a new way of seeing themselves. Now, out of these invisible institutions grew the black churches. And out of the black churches grew the civil rights movement. Now, this story of having an inner revelation and changing how we see ourselves and how we see others is a story that is the Bible. The people in the Bible tell their stories about their own revelation of truth of who they are, their own experience of God. And they tell it from their own cultural context, their own languaging. And the story that I'm going to share with you today is from the Hebrew scriptures, the book of Isaiah. Now, they don't know who really wrote the book of Isaiah. And there's a first Isaiah, second Isaiah, third Isaiah. And I'm going to speak to second Isaiah, who started his ministry when the Jews had been in Babylonia for about 40 years. They too had been exiled, forcibly exiled from their home after it had been destroyed, their temple had been destroyed. And they had become disheartened and discouraged and felt that their day of freedom would never come. But the prophet Isaiah knew that in order for them to experience that physical freedom, They had to be free of those mental constraints within their own minds. They had to be free of the narratives of the Babylonians. They had to be free to understand who they were. And the Bible tells us, and he tells the people how to do this. How do we become free? He says, you got to have a shift in consciousness. You got to shift. You've got to listen. You've got to go inside and hear the truth of who you are. And in chapter 42, verse 16, he says, if you will listen, you will hear that small inner voice tell you, I will lead the blind by a way they did not know. I will guide them on unfamiliar paths. I will turn darkness into light and rough places into level ground. These things I will do for them, and I will not forsake them. This is the promise. So today I am wearing a very colorful stole. It's a kente cloth stole. And this was given to the students of the Unity Urban Ministerial School who graduated or were ordained last June. Last June, I graduated. And this was in honor of, for two reasons, recognizing the 400th anniversary of the beginning of the slave trade and the 40th year of the Unity Urban Ministerial School. Now, I want to honor the African-American who started that, Reverend Ruth Mosley. And if you have, if any of you picked up Gems of Wisdom, you'll find a little bit about her in here. She is a founder of our school, and there's more information. Reverend Sandra Campbell, our director of the Unity Urban School, wrote a couple of articles on unity.org in their archives. Now, Reverend Ruth was born in 1930 in Olive Grove, Mississippi. And next month, she'll turn 90. Now, this was a very segregated town. There were two churches in town. One was named the Halliburton Baptist Church. The other one's name was the White Church. Guess which one she went to? They made sure there was no confusion as to which church she belonged at. Now, as a young girl, one of her chores was to walk the mile-long dirt road to get the mail. And on one of her walks, she found this pamphlet, and she began to read it. And this pamphlet talked about a God of pure love, a God who loved everyone without distinction of their color of their skin or their economic status. That created a shift in her. Now that pamphlet would stay with her, and the words that she read would stay with her all her life. Now that pamphlet was a Unity magazine, and in it was Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, the co-founders of Unity's National Sunday School Lesson. So eventually, Ruth would leave Olive Branch, Mississippi, and find her way to Detroit, Michigan, where she would start attending Detroit Unity Temple. Eventually, she would find Westside Unity and become ordained in 1966. Well, in 1978, an article in Ebony Magazine came out. It was written by Reverend Johnny Coleman, who you've heard Reverend Jill speak to. And what she was writing about was Unity's discriminatory practices. And so the minister from Unity Village Chapel came to Reverend Ruth and said, what can we do to help your people? Well, Reverend Ruth tells them, educate them, build them a school. Because you see, even during those times of discrimination that she herself experienced, she never forgot who she was, and she never lost her focus. She understood her purpose and stayed focused on the truth that would free her and lift others like her from the false teachings that had been keeping them in the bondage of pain, sickness, despair, and poverty. That shift helped her stay focused. She knew who she was. These are great articles about, short articles about Reverend Ruth. And so you might be asking me, okay, wonderful stories, aren't they? What do they have to do with me? What do they have to do with my life today? Like many people, like many white people, I never really paid attention to some of these stories until I realized that these stories, these narratives, as imperfect as they are, they're my story too. And the only way I can change the narrative going forward is to have a shift in my own consciousness, to bring up those unconscious biases and prejudices that I may have that will allow me to be a better person. So there are stories. There are everyone's stories. It's not just Black History Month. It's not just for Black people. In fact, it may be more for us who have the white skin. But it is, when you see yourself differently, you begin to change. You know, the slaves, when they started to form these Black churches, it wasn't just about religion. This was about liberation. Liberation from the identities they were given. Liberations from these limiting thoughts of who they were. And they built a community. So it wasn't just about their change. They built a community. Reverend Ruth wasn't just a shift in her own consciousness and a change for her. She built a community. You see, these gifts of freedom allowed her and empowered her to do that, to start building these beloved communities. Because we have to start somewhere, don't we? We have to be willing to change. Get rid of that shoddy construction, kind of rip out that faulty wiring, and start from where we are, from who we know we are, from that truth, as all of us are expressions of the One. Now, if you want to bless a community that works for all, you're going to have to work for it, right? You're going to have to do the work, because these are our gifts, and it is ours to share, to build that. I want to use this quote from Nelson Mandela, who also understood, who was literally in prison for 27 years, but also had understood true freedom, became the first democratically Black president in South Africa. And he tells us that as we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. And so, freedom is an inside revelation of knowing who we are as created of the Creator. And it gifts us with new sight so that we can see ourselves as these amazing beings that we are. But it also gifts us with the sight of seeing others with the same foundation, the same beingness as us, and therefore gives us what a new way of being in this world. It empowers us and gives us with the ability to move, not to be just believers, but to move from believers to builders of beloved communities. How will you use your gifts of freedom? Thank you. Now, as we move into meditation, I invite you to close your eyes gently. Move your focus to your breath. And as you inhale, allow the movement of the air to fill you and to relax you. And gently exhale, releasing all those worries, all those concerns. And as we slowly breathe in again, we begin to soften our foreheads and our eyes, relax our jaws and our necks. And allow each exhale to soften us more. As we breathe in and feel that expansion in our chest, as we open our hearts, we allow it to relax our shoulders and our arms. As we settle deeper, knowing we are safe, as we allow our breath to move us deeper into that sacred chamber, we settle more, let go more. Free ourselves from all that we think we know. Free ourselves from all that we think we believe. And we relax our legs and our feet, knowing we are grounded, opening up so that we may hear that whisper, that still small voice, the one that tells us, "Beloved, I am here. I will lead you in ways you do not know. I will guide you on those unfamiliar paths. I will turn your darkness into light. I will not forsake you, for you are my beloved." And we take this into that inner chamber, that inner sanctuary, for just a moment. We thank you, Mother, Father, Spirit, God, for the gifts of freedom, for the gifts that allow us to become more of that which you have created us to be. And now, as we come to the end of our meditation, I invite you to slowly become aware of this present moment. And when you are ready, to open up your eyes and see the many expressions of God sitting next to you. And so it is.